Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello, so we return after yet another double game weekends out. We've had disastrous punting on a strike from a struggling team has led to utter failure all round as Watford's Emmanuel... Wait a minute, hang on, sorry. I was reading the script from game week 23. Hold on just a minute. Hello, so we return after yet another double game week ends out. Yep, so we've had disastrous punting on a striker from a struggling team has led to utter failure all round, as Burnley's Wout Weghorst does the square root of bugger all while picking up yellow cards. As Burnley, shockingly, conspires to disappoint everybody. Will we ever learn? Maybe not. Anyway, the three of us are back for a yearly favourite this week. And it's also a course of celebration and misery this episode. The good is our 200th podcast this week. A bit unbelievable, I think, to think, Nick, that we were sat 5 years ago, drunkenly, in my flat recording that podcast on that old blue snowball I borrowed from work and releasing it out into the world. More reflections on that later. And the misery, sadly, this is Anthony's last episode as co-host before he graduates from this FPL nonsense and disappears out into the ether, I suppose, of the real world. Yep, joined by all three of us today. First up, Nick, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Definitely a massive achievement to make it to 200 podcasts. So, yeah, definitely fitting that we get the whole gang back together for one last hurrah. Of course, we are Who Got the Assist. You can find Tom on Twitter at WGTA_FPL. If you want to follow me, even though I don't tweet any longer, you can find me at WGTA_Nick. And also Anthony, for his last pod as co-host, sadly, you can find him on Twitter at FPLStag. So yeah, Anthony, how are you doing?
I seem to have been given a script here. It goes, congratulations, everyone, on reaching 200. I am in tears that this is my last podcast. I mean, I am really inconsolable. No, not really. No, it's great to be with
you. Sound like Stephen Hawking voice.
Read the scripts, Anthony. Don't just tell everyone.
Yeah, no, one last quirky game week to round out the norm of quirkiness in this ever quirkier world, I guess. That's what we've really had in the last week or two with this game week. So the plan for tonight's pod is we'll start off with the usuals. Game week wreckage talk, season objective chatter, mini league update, market forces, and then the meat of the show is, as Tom said, the annual favourite that is the risk profile show. So this is the fourth edition at this point that we've done this. So there's decent data to look at and compare and contrast over the past few seasons. We will have a correspondence section later on in the programme, of course. The listeners' questions as well on the latest double game week that is upcoming. And to finish, we will turn to the navel gazing and all the good news that the podcast has reached 200 episodes. And of course, that there's an upgrade in hosts too. So first of all, we will kick on with the game week reviews.
Cool. So unfortunately, everything is still in progress. So I haven't been able to get an image. Actually, no, Burnley have just finished, just lost 2-0. Hooray! That's fantastic. let's give a quick update on how we've gone. Nick, do you want to go first? I believe you're not on the free. You weren't on the free hit because you're free hitting this week, aren't you?
Yeah, did I score the lowest then? I don't know.
I don't know, actually.
I don't think you could possibly have scored lower than me.
great start. We didn't have time to script this, but yeah, 53 points all out for me. You know, I didn't free hit, so I was actually relatively happy that it wasn't worse than that. You know, I kind of got a red arrow, but it's only a tiny red arrow. When I didn't free hit and I managed to make my moves to have 11 players, you know, I got a few random players that did well for me, like Foden got me 7 points. So I didn't fall into sort of the Mahrez Sterling trap like others did. Son got me 9, Davis got me 5, got a clean sheet from De Gea. 6 points from him, so that's pretty reasonable. Just where it kind of all got a bit unstuck was actually following the herd of the free hitters by taking a hit and bringing in two Burnley players and captaining Vic Hurst and bringing in Tarko, who got me 1 point in the first game and just conceded two to get me 1 point in the second. So yeah, certainly targeting the Burnley players was a bit of a disaster, but overall, you know, even though it's a red arrow, I'm not going to complain too much because I haven't spaffed my free hit on this particular game week. So, you know, you live and learn and move on.
Yeah. Yeah. But, go on. You go, Anthony, I suppose.
Yeah, you're definitely better than me, so you might as well go next. I got 37 points. That included a hit, so it was 41 minus 4. Yeah, another disaster. Ooh. There's no way to spin this one. Only a rank change of minus 13% or so, which I guess tells you just how poorly everyone else has done too. The real difference for my team is that I didn't have a Foden and I didn't have any Spurs coverage whatsoever. And of course, having no Son and Kane this game week was a recipe for disaster. In goals, I had De Gea. That was a lovely 6 points, but I benched Foster, which would have been a few more points. He got 10. My defence was not too bad in that I played both Cancelo and Laporte. So I got 16 from the two of those combined, but then Saïss and Veltman gave me nothing. In midfield, it was a trio of disaster with Bowen, Fernandes and Alan combining for 7 points together. And then up top, I had Brocha, who I had brought in for a hit, no good. Dennis, 2 points, no good. And Weghorst, captain, which is 6 points on Live FPL right now, also no good. So overall, yeah, not a great double game week as they went. I didn't feel like I got caught by anything. It's more, if anything wasn't aggressive enough, I could have perhaps moved on Fernandes and moved on to one of the City assets or Son. But I didn't do that. And to be honest, I might easily have got caught in those aforementioned City traps with Sterling or whoever. So maybe this would have been just as bad no matter what I did.
Mm. Well, caught in City traps. I mean, I can't imagine how that feels. Oh, wait, I can, because I was. So I did free hit this week. I've come out of it with a 55, which is an 8% rank rise from 210K to 190K. So that was well worth it. Basically, obviously, as I said last week during the solo babble, I had 6 players out, so I thought it was worth doing. I didn't want to sell any of those players that I did have out, so I free hit. And it's, not been great, really. I think it's probably the same for everybody. It was a bit of a saving grace. Forster, I put in goal, got a clean sheet. Cancelo with a 9-pointer, which is very nice. I went for me and Tarkovsky because I thought, yeah, I want a bit of a bench, so I'm not going to go with Pope and one of the defenders. I'm going to go for double defenders and hope for a goal in the set-piece lottery. That did not happen. In midfield, Fernandes somehow blanked. Somehow. I mean, if you look at his numbers, it's absolutely ridiculous that he blanked. And if you watch Match of the Day back, oh, wow. Wow, well, what a performance, and you know, just spurning chances left, right, and centre, really. The Man City double midfield I went with was Raheem Sterling, who got a clean sheet, brilliant, and Riyad Mahrez, who was predicted by everybody to start, didn't do so. I mean, it was one of those where I had like all the configurations as you do on a free hit. I have a double. The double defence sat around there. I had one team with those two, and I had Che Adams in instead of Breuer, which I didn't go with. Sterling and Mahrez for grand total of 4 points, which was fantastic. Son did do something, of course. Up front, I had Breuer, Kane with the 11-pointer, and Weghorst. So the irony is that the two players who did best for me, other than Son, are the only two players that survived from my original team. The rest of the team did the square root of nothing. And on the bench indeed, I had Gunn, Elanga, Ben Johnson, who got a clean sheet, and Daniel Amati, who got 8 points tonight. So just sums it up, really. Absolutely hilarious. You can only laugh at this point, really. It's just, yeah, whatever. But I'm well set for the next few weeks anyway. So we shall see. Objective time, final time, Anthony. What did you do this time? Did you do anything to do with your objectives? Do you even care anymore?
The objectives, they're definitely dimming from view very quickly. I did captain with the herd, I guess, with the Weghorst disaster, given that he had an EO in the top 10K of 160-odd%. So I'll consider that objective matched. And to be perfectly honest with you, going with the herd has largely played well. And it's the days where I've maybe gone against the not so much the herd, but gone against the herd by chasing the algos, which they, you know, often they're aligned, especially when Salah is the one that everyone's going for, but they aren't totally so. And I think when I've gone with the algorithms over the herd, I feel I've been punished more often than not this season. That's kind of just something I've kind of observed. I haven't done any analysis of it, but here we are anyway. Not a particularly good result this week with that captaincy. Pretty much all the rest of them then, like, don't be afraid to transfer out elite players if they've dropped off. I don't really feel like that was a question this week. Like, I don't feel like Bruno Fernandes has dropped off or is underperforming. He's obviously had good game weeks in relatively recent past. And also, as you say, Tom, talking about if you just any sort of eye test, even actually the statistics about Manchester United are bearing out that someone like Bruno Fernandes, or indeed other United attackers, do merit a place in an FPL team. The returns just aren't coming with it yet. There's an awful lot of questions to be asked about the dressing room there, about how things are organized at the club, if players are playing under Rangnick, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I do feel like Fernandes was at least meriting his place, and there wasn't a question of being afraid to get rid of him. The timings and the play style, like, max 10 hits total. Like, this is basically the pod which explains why that was just an impossible thing to do this season. I've broken through the 10 hit barrier, and I'm going to continue to do so. And in terms of transfers late on a Friday night or Saturday morning, I don't think I was too bad on that this game week. But to be perfectly honest with you, the game week started so long ago that I don't actually know anymore.
Yeah, no, I know the feeling. For me, captaincy, I did what Mikel's algorithm told me to do, and the other two don't count because I free hitted this week. Nick, we haven't heard from you in a while. How are you doing? A slow march towards your usual sort of just about top 100k sort of classic Harris sort of season.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm kind of lurking in that same position I spend my entire FPL career in, which is about 75k overall rank. So pretty standard from me as far as how FPL is going, a bit better than you guys, but, you know, nothing to kind of shout and sing about. Yeah, I think with the objectives, I think my target was similar really with you guys in terms of the captaincy, which was just about playing it safe, trusting big hitters and not trying to be too clever, which, you know, obviously with this week I captained alongside the herd with Veghurst, so didn't really wasn't too clever, even though it didn't work out in the end. At least I kind of, you know, matched our objective. And yeah, in terms of going for momentum picks, I feel like I transferred in Veghurst because I felt like there was a bit of a momentum driven by the double. Again, you know, I don't know if I'd have gone with that if I hadn't kind of felt like, you know, the FOMO of getting in the Burnley players. So I kind of fell for that trap a little bit with the double up especially, but it was the minus four sort of was made literally 10 minutes before the deadline when I realised I was playing Michael Keane against Manchester City as part of my 11 men, which I had to, yeah. I felt like I had to rectify pretty quickly looking at it. I was like, well, that's a joke. And then Keane ends up getting the same as Tarko, ironically, which I really couldn't predict. But yeah, my other objective was just to listen to other people and the masses more and not try and be too clever. And I think this week I didn't go too experimental. I kind of just, you know, listened to what everyone else was doing. You know, I saw that I didn't have any Burnley defenders. So I was like, you know, well, a lot of people are doubling up on this free hit. So I got a bit nervous about that and thought, actually, I'll get one of them in just for coverage. And yeah, it didn't work out.
Yeah.
Because it's Burnley and we all fell for that trap. But
We did. One of those that's going to go down, filed away in a cabinet, a drawer of a file cabinet that I call, looked like a good idea at the time.
it goes in there with Duffy and Dennis and all these other double game weeks.
All of those terrible, terrible choices from the past. Right.
It is nice to have tradition though, isn't it? Like, there's always just this shamble, but it's nice that it's happened again. I kind of find it funny. Negredo comes to mind as well from a good season.
Oh, Negredo. Yeah, that was one of them, wasn't it? Dear me. It's double game week, did nothing. And the next game week, he scored against difficult opposition. That's all I remember about that one. But yeah, it does seem to kind of have a way, doesn't it? Right, Min League update. I think we'll try to do one quickly. Obviously, the dust is settling, but I think, Anthony, everyone is in order, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. People are still flying. That's pretty much the good news. It was, people have done well. 50, 60-ish points is kind of the norm in there. James Corralt has actually sneaked into the top 10 now at 55 on his free hit. Sam McAlfee is just ahead of him. He has 1,908 points. Harry Solomons is in eighth with Kadira Pindrop. He has 60 points this game week. He's had the same number of points as Troy Hope, who has who also captained Veghorst, 60 points as well this week. And indeed, also on 1910 points is Tor Evan Pedersen, his team Money Maze. He got 61 this week. Just ahead of them, 1 point ahead. So in fifth, alone by himself, is Chris Turner, his team, the Grimsby Brothers, or the Brothers Grimsby even. Also captain Veghorst, also was on his free hit. Also probably disappointed, but still 58 points. And fifth in this mini league is pretty bloody good. In fourth and down from third is Brett Taylor's team, I Love Lamptey. He got 60 points, also on his free hit. Ahead of them is James S, who's down from second to third, but having not free hitted and taken a hit, 52 points this week while captaining Veghorst. He's done okay, really, to consolidate his position at the top. In second, up from fourth, is Caleb St. Ather. His team, Credit to the Boys, got 68 points. And he, unlike everyone else in the top 10, captained someone that wasn't Veghorst. He captained Pope, and he got 10 points for his trouble. So fair play to him. That was a nice gain on the other people's captains. And in top, still in position from last week, Hakon Magerness. His team, XL11, got 59 points. He captained Veghorst too. A team with Pope, Walkers-Peters, me, Cancelo, Sancho, De Bruyne, Mahrez, Son, Veghorst captain, as I said, Broca, and Harry Kane for 11 points, leading him there. He also had Amarty benched and Dan Byrne benched, so could have been more there, but still good going, 59 points, 1934 points overall.
Nice, well played, everybody. Really like Harry Solomon's team name, Kadira Pindrop. That's a very, very good.
I thought it too, as I said. I was like, I don't think we've seen that one in here before. That was very good.
Excellent, excellent. Hats off to you, Harry. Right, and finally, in this little update section, it's the market forces. I think we can just about get into it. I'm fairly sure that most people weren't waiting on the Burnley results to start making their moves. Whereby, Nick, it looks like one man is being bought back in droves.
Yeah, it's all about Mo Salah this week in terms of the market forces. So obviously a few people sold him for the blank with the immediate plan to get him straight back in, which makes sense because it's Mo Salah. But yeah, he's top of the market forces, 170,000 transfers in for him right now at this time of recording. Otherwise, a few other names appearing. Shea Adams is actually second most transferred in, perhaps one that people are targeting on the free hit or on the wild cards or whatever, because he's got a double game week. Southampton actually have a very nice double game week of Aston Villa and Newcastle. And whilst lots of people have Broya, it's actually been Shea Adams that's been really performing well in the last few weeks. He's got three goals and an assist in his last four games. So certainly one that's appearing on a lot of people's radar now. And also Livramento, actually, he's the fifth most transferred in player right now with 70,000 transfers in. So a lot of people targeting him as well. He picked up an assist against Everton in game week 26 and then a clean sheet and a couple of bonus points against Norwich in 27. So, you know, the Livramento wagon seems to be back on after sort of dying a death a few game weeks back. So, yeah. People targeting Southampton there for the double game week. Also Jimenez, he's the other one that makes up the top five. So obviously Wolves have a double game week as well. Crystal Palace and Watford, quite a nice one. But a few question marks there because he didn't actually start the last game. A little bit of rotation there from Bruno Lage. So when I'm looking at my own free hit, I'm wondering about Jimenez and whether he can fit in, or I'm a bit worried about some of the other guys like Neto and Podence, Fabio Silva, Trincao. Seems like there's a lot of rotation going on at Wolves in terms of their attacking line and Hwang as well. So definitely one to kind of keep an eye on. Whilst he looks like a great pick, it's just a question mark as to whether he's nailed or not. We don't know. But we'll look as well at the sales. So in terms of the transfers out, mostly the West Ham guys, actually, Jared Bowen and Antonio that are being heavily sold. People still do own Antonio, surprisingly, with 92,000 transfers out and for him and 97,000 for Bowen. And we do have a question on Bowen as well later.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of the kind of activities in midfield, isn't it? As you said earlier on, despite, you know, Salah being the most transferred in player, other than that, it's most midfielders who are being sold. Bowen, Jota, Bruno Fernandes are the three sort of headline ones. You've got that's De Bruyne, Bernardo, Smith Rowe, oddly, are still being sold. There's a lot of players there who it basically looks like there's low people who are free hitted and have now come back to their real team and gone, oh, I need to make some serious changes here. Stat.
Well, one thing I would say actually about the Jota being the second most sold midfielder is kind of interesting. I think it kind of shows that the Liverpool triumvirate the people are going for is probably two defenders at this point, and Salah being their third player, rather than what we used to see, which was the double up in the midfield for Liverpool, probably with Jota and Salah, and then your Trent. But Robbo's recent form is probably grabbing attention so much that he's just insides at this point, and the third berth is seeing Jota being sacrificed.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one because he has been injured, so you'd have thought that people would have sold him already. You know, they might have sold him for the double game week or for the blank, and then he did actually play in the League Cup. He came off the bench, so he's back now. But then, you know, Diaz also, as you said, he really impressed. So there is a bit of rotation risk that's starting to build up in the Liverpool front three, especially if Firmino's coming back as well. We don't really know if Jota's going to play or not, which isn't ideal.
No, certainly not. All right, let's take a break there before we head into the main section of this pod, the risk profiles.
Who got the assist?
So we're back and it's into the risk profiles, one of our sort of favourite pods to do. We do it every year. I'm aware we're going for a more feature-led one here to begin with, just because, yeah, you know, double game week and stuff coming up. But that'll be in the questions, of course. And I mean, come on, it's Anthony's last pod. We're going to do something, you know, less itinerant, more fun, aren't we? So why is this useful? Well, there are very few core decisions every year. The way I see it, there are probably about 326. 37 transfers, you choose 15 starting players, you'd have two wild cards in which you choose 15 players, so you have first decisions there, 15 free hit players, you choose when to play those chips, so that's three extra decisions there, you have one triple captain, one bench boost, captain times 38, vice times 38, and four times 37 bench choices. You don't have 38 because obviously you bench boost 1 week, so that's 326. This year though, you also have an additional free hit, so that's also 15 more choices, 15 players to choose on a free hit, and one choice of when you play it. So this year you've had 342 core choices versus 326 in the regular season. Now, hits are different because they're voluntary actions you take on top of this. Long-term listeners remember that me and Nick have spoken about enforced hits versus elective hits in the past. You know, the things that compel you to hit, which are not voluntary. They're the kind of ones which are enforced, so an injury, a player being dropped, something like that. And elective is when you kind of think, you know what, I think the player I'm bringing in is going to do better than what I'm getting rid of over the next few weeks, or even in the next week because they've got double game week, or you know, they've got better fixtures. And you can, of course, elect to do nothing at all. But this pod isn't really about doing nothing. It's about looking at those hits, no matter whether they're elective or enforced, and using them as a barometer for your risk profile. What sort of risk appetite, I guess, you have as a manager, and what can you learn from that? This year in particular has been difficult. The parade of postponements has caused us to slightly alter the tiers that we normally talk about, as Nick will mention. And we've got 4 years' worth of poll data to examine as well. Lots of anecdotes from Twitter and things like that. And Anthony in a sec will detail how these things may have slightly shifted over time, perhaps reflecting the pandemic uncertainty. But first, so risk profiles. Nick, can you remind kind of longer term listeners and maybe inform newer listeners what these are?
Yeah, certainly. So our hardcore listeners, they'll know this annual feature intently. It's one that I always get wheeled out to do, regardless of what's going on. And something we always target on doing around this time of year as well, like looking at the previous poll data. It's always been around January or February that we've kind of done this annual feature. And yeah, risk profiling is something that financial institutions will do on their investors just to determine you know, what kind of investor they are, and subsequently recommend certain funds to them based on this assessment. And this is typically done online these days, and has created the rise of robo-advice firms, which ultimately use an algorithm and they'll make an assessment of your personality and will give you advice based on what they feel your personality is like. And in terms of FPL, we've applied this, as we do every year, to the FPL sphere by looking at managers and how many hits they've taken over the course of the year and assessing them and providing them with a risk profile label off the back of that. This year, just to mix it up a little bit, we put a little bit of a crypto spin on it, just to freshen it up, I guess. And apologies as well in advance if crypto is not your thing, as I know it can be a polarizing subject for many. Some view it as the future of digital currency, others view it as a bubble that will burst, and you know, everyone's entitled to their views, whatever. But you know, we've updated as well and we've adapted our categories this year. So normally it's 0 to 4 for cautious and 5 to 8 moderate, but this year, because it's been so crazy with all the cancelled fixtures, all the COVID-19, there's been so many blanks and doubles, we have adapted the numbers a little bit just to kind of emphasize that, and with some very interesting results as well. So I guess, Anthony, you've got the numbers from the prior years as well. And Tom's just brought it up on the screen as well for people who are watching on YouTube to run through here.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's quite a lot to get through, really, with 4 years of data at this point. But kind of maybe the interesting things to note with our trends is looking back to 2018-19 and indeed 2019-20. So the two pre-pandemic seasons that we were doing this analysis for. When we took analysis, it was actually, funnily enough, always in pre-game week 23 that we managed to do the analysis in both of those years. Most people, so somewhere between 40 to 60%, depending on the year, took between 0 and 4 hits. So we saw that people were being pretty cautious about taking hits in the pre-pandemic era. And I guess then very few people then in that time as well took anything like, you know, 15 hits and burned something like 60 points. It wasn't really a thing. It was somewhere between like 6 and 10% of people that would do that. Last season, we had a pandemic season and things started to change. First of all, I guess that's really emphasized in the number of people that took 15 plus hits. We saw that tick up to about 13.5%. That's a significant uptick. But the majority of people now were being found in the zone of people that had taken between 5 and 8 hits, who'd burned 20 to 32 points. About a third of people who listened had taken 5 to 8 hits by, at that point, game week 26. And about 30% of people had taken under 4 hits or 4 hits indeed. So what we were finding there was that there were so many people who were burning 36 points or more, taking over 9 hits, 37.5%. This season, things are mirroring that. So what we've done is we're taking this data a little bit later this season, unfortunately. It's pre-game week 28. So we've opened up the parameters, but also because we're looking at a COVID season, we're trying to understand where people are coming at things. And so we've had to, you know, even change like the maximal hit number. And so most interestingly, I guess, is the number of people who have taken more than 18 hits. So remember, in previous seasons, you know, even last season, over 15 hits, it was 14% of people. And now, more than 15 hits, we're talking about 20% of people. It's a massive uptick. The pre-pandemic era, we didn't see 10% of people doing it. Now we're seeing double the number of people doing that. And indeed, with 18 hits as well, not 15 hits. So we've ticked it up, and even still, people are burning points in a way that they used to before. The number of people then, let's say, who are in the very cautious group, that 0 to 6 hits taken is what we've looked at this year. And that's about a quarter of managers. There was a period in the pre-pandemic era where it was around half of listeners were there. Even last season, it was about a third of listeners that were in that bracket. Now, indeed, there's very, you know, by comparison, very few, just 1 in 4. 7 to 12 hits is the norm, or where most people kind of find themselves. And 37.1% of our respondents had taken between 7 and 12 hits. 13 to 18 hits, 17.6%. So not a particularly large number of people were in that cohort compared to then the more than 18 hits, the 1 in 5 people, 20.4%. So we're just seeing all around, people are becoming much more risk-seeking as they try to presumably adapt to the different challenges that are being thrown at them by pandemic-era football, unexpected blanks, or indeed blanks that we see coming down the line, but which at the end of the day do cause us to alter our plans at a pretty short notice.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we'll come on to kind of perhaps analysing why that may be, but I think you probably hit me on the head already in terms of the fact that it's the pandemic. There was that postponement period around Christmas where hits became the norm and -8 became the new zero, effectively. I think that has pushed things up. And even though, as Anthony says, we've reflected how things have changed in this sort of crazy season by upping the number of hits which sit in each category, it's still incredible to see the amount of people who have said, you know, but they've taken more than 18 hits this season. that's a lot of points burned, but there are individuals out there who have done it, and more individuals than ever, 1 in 5 of them. Let's look at a few of these sort of different categories together, and Nick will describe kind of the outline, I suppose, of who they are. I'll give a few individuals who commented on Twitter why they're doing this, you know, what their approach is. Thanks very much to everybody who did comment, by the way. I can't get through absolutely everybody who did comment. I think we've got about 50, 60 comments. I've picked out a few, which I think are very, very useful just to illustrate the point, and we'll speak about them as well. Let's move on to the very first one, then, and that is the cautious risk taker at 0 to 6 hits this season, but normally 0 to 4.
Yeah, the cautious people. So yeah, as Anthony alluded to, you know, we used to see a much higher number of this kind of player, but this year the numbers have dropped significantly, obviously with all the cancellations. So what we've referred to as a cautious investor, so as I said, throwing a bit of crypto terminology around, in the crypto space, perhaps these people would be people who maybe not even invest in crypto at all, but if they did, they'd stick to Bitcoin or Ethereum and basically just hodl their investments, so they'd never sell it. They'd just sit there and just allow it to just grow and not mess around with it, and it'd only be a tiny proportion of their investment ultimately. And in fantasy terms, going back to fantasy, of course, these are people obviously haven't taken any hits at all. They're just happy with the auto captain Salah. They're happy with Trent, Cancelo, Jared Bowen, just sitting there churning points week in, week out. And there's no real reason for these managers to change things up, and no real reason for them to take hits just to settle occasionally a corrective action, you know, if someone gets injured or something like that, or for a double game week. But yeah, Otherwise, stick with the team you've got.
Absolutely. I mean, we had a couple of managers in the past. We've had loads of people who have said, I've taken zero hits this season. I only got two responses this year, at Live FPL Tables and at FPL Flair. Both of them taken zero. Live FPL Tables said he plans to keep that zero hits up. He said it makes him more disciplined and makes him think more carefully about what he's doing. And he spends less time on transfers as well by doing it. And FPL Flair has said he's also done the same thing. So it's a conscious decision by these two managers to try to do so. Elsewhere, FPL Tom Jones said he's taken five hits so far this season. And again, he's trying to be patient, and he's trying to not play aggressively to prevent needless hits being taken. Your countryman, FPL Granada, Anthony, said that he'd taken two minus fours and two minus eights. So he ranked 2.8K. He's done pretty well out of that. Pete Alouace has only taken five hits so far. He's had to field kind of fewer players on occasion, but it's not affected his rank too badly. And he made a conscious decision very early on, as we were saying, way back when the COVID cancel games occurred, to spread the money around. He did that very, very quickly. He was an early adopter of that, and that's really helped because he's had been able to rely on his bench. And FPL Theorist as well. So just five hits for him. He says he doesn't describe himself as a conservative or low-risk manager. He does things like buying Robbo and selling Jota, for example. So he leaves himself open sometimes to being hit by EO. We've got questions about this later on. He does have a high risk taker rating on FPL Review, but nonetheless, you know, he's not taking that many hits this season. I mean, this is an interesting sort of area, isn't it, Anthony? I think it's one where historically we'd see most people kind of sit, especially where we don't have the pandemic sort of craziness, which can affect behaviour.
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. And I guess this is something that maybe there's something that was reflected in our objectives at the start of the season, or certainly mine, you know, this aspirational idea to avoid taking hits in so much as possible. And this has traditionally been the way to go about FPL. It would be seldom that you'd see someone who was taking hits left, right and centre going particularly well. And that's why I guess we saw 42.7% and 59.1% in 2019 and 2020 who fell into this, you know, low risk, risk averse category. And now we're seeing it. It's very different, of course. And I guess the people who are doing it this year, they must have been people who had a squad of 15 and who trusted their bench and their long-term planning. When they look back and they saw the players that they had in their squad, they were happy with the plan that they had in place that brought those players in, and they were happy to allow those players come off their bench. And indeed, they were probably people who weren't panicked by being down to 9 or 10 players at times, knowing that the player they brought in, especially if it was a defender, some kind of, you know, low rank midfielder, or especially a forward, I guess, this season, the likelihood was that that player they brought in was only going to get them a 2 or a 4 pointer anyway, and weren't going to pay off the hit. And these people were very disciplined, and fair play to some of the people who've got back to us there. They've done really well out of it, but very, very challenging thing to do in the circumstance. And I guess there's two ideas that are kind of contrary wisdom here. The wisdom I alluded to, that we shouldn't take hits at all. But then there's the more kind of obvious idea of, well, you need to buy a ticket to win the lottery and you should probably have 11 players playing in a game week. And these were probably people who trusted themselves to just get by without doing that in given weeks. And maybe it's proven good for them overall, but a very tough category to be in. And indeed, that's why we've seen a far lower percentage of people in this cautious category, just 1 in 4.
There is restraint required, isn't there, to just avoid the FOMO, lots of kind of small C conservatism to think, you know what, all right, I'm going to have 9 players this week compared to 11 out there, but I don't bleed small amounts over the course of the season. And that creates eventually a decent stockpile. I imagine these people are, you know, accountants or some actuaries, something very, very safe like that. And that probably means that that kind of behavior, the behavioral pattern links over into FPL. I thought it was really interesting though to see that people were kind of saying, you know, strategically at the start of the season, they thought about doing that. And it makes them think carefully about the moves they make. And it means that, you know, they stick to that kind of core decision base of those sort of 342 or 329 normal seat 326 moves in a regular season. I think that's really interesting. So yeah, well played to people who are in that, and they all seem to have recanted that they're having a very, very good season off the back of it. So as we say every year, maybe there's something in not taking too many hits.
Yeah, very impressive. So yeah, we'll move on to the next category. It's actually one I fell into myself. Having taken 11 hits, I was just in within the threshold. So for people who have taken 7 to 12 hits this season, up to 48 points burnt in total, we've classified these people as moderate risk takers. So these are people perhaps who would own Bitcoin and Ethereum in crypto, but they may have looked at a few other coins, invested in a few other large cap coins, but certainly haven't got too experimental with their crypto. And in FPL, these are managers that aren't afraid of a hit. They're looking obviously to try and get maximum potential out of the doubles and the blank game weeks. And, you know, if it means that they have to take a hit to kind of maximize that potential, they will do, but they're still trying to take them in moderation. And if they can avoid a hit, they will. And, you know, this season, as I said, it's mostly been about attacking those double game weeks. But ultimately, 7 to 12 hits in 29 game weeks is less common to take a hit than to not take a hit. So definitely people kind of in the moderate category here.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we had quite a few people in this sort of bracket. And as Anthony mentioned earlier, this was the highest kind of response rate in terms of the brackets people are in. I think it is people who have migrated across to this one, maybe due to the fact that we've upped the hits due to the pandemic kind of parade of postponements. But equally, I think there are a lot of people here who have just been reacting to what they've seen in front of them. So Matthew Jones at FPL Matthew, who was on the pod a little while back now, he said he's taken 9 so far. He normally takes less than 5 per season. He's an accountant, so that's exactly why he does that. Play boringly, look after your money, et cetera, et cetera. I love accountants. Anyway, he says that there's more chance of a hit playing off in blanks and doubles, and that's why he's done what he's done this year, because there have been more of those. And that echoes what Nick said about maximizing potential. And when he was on, he was obviously all about shoring up those weakest links, making sure he was removing the weakest link in his team. And so it's proved in that kind of situation. Elsewhere, at FPL Antiques, Martin, so he's taken 10 hits. Again, he says it's more than usual. So success can be very hard to judge. Sometimes the hits have worked out, sometimes they haven't. FPL JMO, friend James, a friend of the pod, 11 hits, he said. Again, slightly more than normal, only due to COVID postponements. FPL Fly, same situation, 9 hits. And he only took his hits over the course of the Christmas period because COVID meant that he was forced into action. And Hannah Calcio, where Pepe said she just checked this yesterday, 11 hits to date. Said she'll call half of them successful. And finally, Dave, friend of the pod, at Dave's, he's at FPL, who asked me 2 questions, I think, last week. I said he's been trying to be more conservative than usual this season, but he's still taken 10 and they've all paid off. So well done.
I also fall into this category, so I've taken 11 hits as well, like Nick. And it's kind of interesting listening to the diverse stories that you're telling us there about people who probably didn't usually find themselves in this category and who now find themselves in this category. And I think this is a category that in previous seasons I've sometimes been in and sometimes haven't been in. I tend to be kind of in that near accountant status, and here I am again, kind of in that category. And It's interesting because there's kind of two stories that seem to be at play here. There's people who were taking hits to survive blanks or COVID or whatever, however you want to phrase it. And then there's people who are justifying this by people who are chasing double game weeks, maximizing their returns or buying tickets to the lottery and hoping that it pays off just by virtue of the fact that at least no matter what, if you've bought someone in for a double game week, you'll get the 4 points and the hit will disappear. You'll only be down 2 points on a player that just got two to start with. And indeed, that might have been a problem for you if it was a blank game week. It is an interesting category, I guess, as well, just for the sheer volume of people that are in it. That 37.1% is like it is huge. Like, and I think it does maybe show us where, as you said, Tom, the people that used to be in the cautious category have just migrated just that ever so slightly in reaction to everything that has gone on. I'd be really interested to kind of really break that down into how many of those people were, you know, chasing glory as opposed to just protecting themselves against a given blank game week. It's hard to know that from just the bit of data that we've got from people just writing into us and things, but it seems to be pretty equal. And indeed, I think in my own story, it would be kind of that I probably took as many hits chasing points later in the season as I did trying to survive to begin with in the real COVID affected Christmas period.
I mean, you still had at the start of the season a few people said, you know, that they've made a conscious decision to be more restrained this year. I mean, you did do that in the objectives, didn't you? And it's just the course of this season, the way it has gone, meant that kind of whole objective got away from you. And it sounds like a few people, it's kind of been the same sort of scenario, hasn't it?
Yeah, I was so about a third of the way into the season, I was on target to take 10 hits or less. I'd taken 3 by game week 13. So that was, you know, on target. I was on target there for 9-ish in total. And then you can kind of just in the Christmas period and just after it, there's 8s, there's 4s. And then more recently, again, it's 4-4-4-4 as I'm trying to get through the blank periods and indeed chasing points in the doubles as well. Largely unsuccessfully, I must add. And I guess that pretty much mirrors all the stories that we had from people who wrote in put together, and that I was both taking hits to survive in the blanks but also actually to chase points later.
I think there definitely, as you said, will be two typologies of people in here. People who are kind of reluctant immigrants, I suppose, into this category versus those who are kind of normally around that sort of area and kind of think, you know what, 10-ish hits every season is probably about right. Let's move on then to the high risk takers. And I am in this category, aren't I, Nick?
Yeah, so these are people who are aggressive risk takers is how I've referred to it, as opposed to high, but this is sort of 13 to 18 hits. And you know, in crypto, these are people who've gone down that rabbit hole. It's not just about those large coins now, but it's about the small caps investing in lots of different blockchains, potentially going off exchange to DeFi, looking at exciting tokens via Uniswap and PancakeSwap. And with these guys, FPL managers, you know, nobody is safe in their teams, not even Mo Salah. They have a lower tolerance with FPL assets. So a couple of blanks means that those players will be shown the door. And, you know, they're willing to experiment with other players, take risks on captaining players like Sterling or De Bruyne if the situation requires it. So, yeah, unlike the sort of the cautious risk takers who sit with their key assets and just leave them over the course of the season, the aggressive risk takers, they certainly gamble a little bit more with those players and go for more differentials as well.
Yeah, a few people that I recognise in this category who respond to us year after year did respond here as well. So Mars at Mars05, Gafrenda Pod, says he's taken 18 total hits this season, a few wildcard mistakes early that needed fixing, a few kind of different bits and pieces of attacking the doubles. So he doesn't mind hits, but not this much perhaps. 70% success he said he's had. Karam Tizer, we've got a question from him later on. 16 hits from him. 8 of them in the 5 game weeks of COVID outbreaks. So, yeah, he's wondering whether that's poor planning as well. Probably isn't Karam, to be honest. It's probably just a reaction to the situation. Alan, FPL Diagnosis, says he's taken 15, but it feels like a whole lot more. He feels like, you know, it's been one of those seasons where things have had to change a lot, and he's considering, you know, huge hits to come as well. So he's in one of the more insane categories as managers to him, unusually. FPL PTSD says he's having the best season ever. He's in the top 10K. He's taken 14 hits so far this season, and it just seems to have worked out. Basically, he seems to have hit a lot of the players when he's been taking the hit in those sort of difficult game weeks. And Dr. Emmett Brown at FPL Bats of the Future, 15 hits across 10 game weeks, and it's been a huge game for him. And for me, you know, I've always been a bit of a risky manager. I'm always happier to have that fun and gamble that it's going to come good. And you know, I look at it and think, oh yeah, I've got to make 7 points for this hit to be worthwhile if it's an elective one. But this year, of course, there's been loads of more enforced ones. I'm happy, as Anthony has said, to just kind of just buy a ticket, basically. Sometimes variants have smashed me in the face, see Kai Havertz. But this year it's been okay. I've tried to adopt a more expected value friendly regard to taking hits. But with COVID, it's been quite difficult to do that. In sum, I've transferred out 59 points this year. I've transferred in 181 points. So that's 122 minus the 68 points in hits I've taken this year. I'm up 54 points this year, and that's without captains being added in. Obviously, Mo Salah triple captain would skew that massively into the positive category. Obviously, that's also incredibly crude. There's lots of shoulda, woulda, couldas, but it's impossible to assess the opportunity costs I missed out on from taking a hit. And the COVID cancellations as well makes it very difficult to do a 5-week assessment, because players are often transferred in, then transferred out again very quickly as games disappeared. But, you know, my objective was very much about, you know, not really shirking taking the hit, because I found that in the last few years, if I've been taking the hit, I've done all right. And a lot of the time, my key sort of source of anxiety or regret after game weeks has been that I didn't take the hit that I really wanted to. Some of them have not been good. So Kai Havertz, I mentioned, but I still feel bad about not taking the hit for a lot of players. And perhaps that's just kind of a psychological thing. But for example, last week, not buying Weghorst for Edouard, and that 12-point swing, something like that. That's something that kind of plays in my mind. It's more about what I didn't do than what I did do that annoys me. I'm just sat in that kind of category just about.
It's interesting when you look at this particular category, mostly because, okay, 17.6% of respondents fell into this, but even last year, 24% of people fell into this, you know, high risk-taking category. And indeed, even in pre-pandemic year of 2018-19, 15.7% of people fell into this category. Of course, that totally ignores the fact that a huge amount of people are now in the category below this who have taken even more hits. So we are kind of still seeing that general migration of people towards more risk-taking, more hit-taking, probably, as we say, in reaction to the circumstances. I would say, if I was to put forward a supposition, I would say that the people who are in this category probably have had to react a little bit more than the people who are in the 7 to 12 hit category. So I'll call these people like the reaction plus plus people. There was someone in there said that they'd had a disastrous wildcard and that they just had to do an extra amount of transfers to just fix that.
Mars.
There it was Mars. And like, that's, I think that that's probably a fairly reflective story of an awful lot of people who find themselves in this category, that, you know, maybe in an ideal world, they'd have been with the majority, the 37.1% who'd taken 7 to 12 hits, but just circumstances of their own transfers and then reacting to everything that has happened meant that they just found themselves even further down in this category. And it's an awful lot of point hits to have taken, but people may find themselves kind of uncomfortable to find themselves in this category, whereas I think the people that we're going to be talking about next are probably reveling in the fact that they take loads of risks.
I'm not uncomfortable to be in this category, and
you might wish you're in the next one.
if things have been different, I remember last year, Nick put me in this category, and I said, "Actually, Nick, I've already taken a -4, so I'm already in the extreme category," which we were just going to mention just now. That is obviously the extreme risk taker, 17 plus hits this season.
Yeah, definitely, and I think on the poll it was 19 actually, but
sorry, 19.
But yeah, I think I was on the edge of the aggressive risk taker, and it's not normally in my sort of FPL personality to take so many hits. But I think with COVID, I was just on that edge of becoming one. So certainly feel for the people who've been forced into the category almost against their will, just through sheer bad luck. But certainly when it comes to the extreme risk takers, these are people that just love taking gambles. So in crypto, they're looking to shoot for the moon. They're looking at initial coin offerings. They're looking at day trading, shorts, leverages. They're taking big gambles with their money, and they could make millions on a Shiba Inu coin, but they could easily lose it all as well. And in FPL, there's constant changes week in, week out for these managers. You know, they could jump on Mane one week, and if he blanks, they'll be on Sterling for the next week. And KDB, you know, it doesn't matter on the player. They're just, you know, mixing it up every single week and getting a new player in and just trying to get that fix. And it's all about the hit ultimately for these people. But yeah, certainly this year it's very interesting to see how so many more managers have fallen into this category compared to previous years. So perhaps it's a bit of the season that's kind of driven people into taking more gambles perhaps than they would have used to.
Yeah, I think a lot of the people who did mention here, who did speak here, tend to be people who are already in this category, as it were, like by rote every year. So FPL Chimp Paradox, a fellow Irishman, if it was Anthony, said that he's taken 24 hits so far. He's an aggressive player and tends to take loads of hits every season. But COVID has definitely been a factor this season. He's taken two minus 16s and a minus 12, but he's taken a green arrow each time. So anyway, Dave Glass, a friend of the pod, says he goes for a minus four most weeks. One free transfer, he says, isn't enough. Chris Smith, FL Moth, says he's taken 23 hits this season, six in the last 2 weeks to navigate this patch without two free hits. So he used those earlier on as well. So, you know, taking hits for a free hit, being aggressive with those, definitely has done things. And he said there's been a few times where, you know, it would have been a massive red arrow if he hadn't done anything. And finally, Piter 30, said that he'd taken 29 hits this season. His OR was 79K, and he's looking at taking two or three more this week. So very Moorish, aren't they, Anthony?
These are extreme numbers of hits. Like, that's an incredible rank to have with that many hits. Like, I can't believe that many risks have paid off to have someone anywhere near the top 100K when they've dumped well over 100 points in hits. Like, anyone who's in this category has knocked off at least 76 points. That is pretty extreme. And like, there's dopamine seeking people for sure in here, and the people that you talked about who would have found themselves in this category anyway. The thing is that our respondents tended to be, you know, it was 10, 6, 13.5% of people that were in this, and we now find 20.4% in here. So, okay, yeah, there definitely are people who were always playing, you know, had a play style that found them in this category, but there are people who have definitely been forced into this section by circumstance, probably who wouldn't have liked to be in it before and who were probably fairly small C conservatives before, because indeed 2019-20, for example, you know, very few people, it was less than 15% of people had taken less than nine hits by, or who had taken more than nine hits by, you know, game week 23. Now we're seeing a massive proportion. We're seeing well over double that in this category alone. So, you know, largely I think circumstances have definitely inflated this group, and it's an incredible amount of hits, but the amount of people who were able to write in and say how well they've done, I guess, is testament to the idea that there's more than one way to play this game, and that maybe sometimes we're anchored in our accepted wisdom of how to play FPL, and there are people who are really pushing the boundaries of that and succeeding.
I think it's just because you've in the past, like, one of those big influences, maybe Mark Subbins and Late Riser aside, most of them have been very hit averse and been very patient, like FPL General, Matthew Jones, who spoke about earlier on. Those sort of guys have influenced so many teams out there. We spoke about shadow boxing against these sort of influencer teams in the past in our mini leagues. You certainly see my Workman League, for example, loads of people in General's Patreon just basically copying him. Lots of Andy as well, we've had in the pod recently, also do that sort of thing. Let's talk FPL. So, I mean, this is the antithesis of that sort of play style, isn't it? But I think it's very interesting to see people just playing this way, and a couple of people saying, you know what, actually, every year I've managed to fend off so many red arrows that it's sort of made it worth it. But you've got to think about it and think, okay, I mean, I think about it every year, but I'm still going to do it, take a lot of hits, because I think it's more fun that way. Maybe I'm seeking the dopamine hit, maybe I'm chasing the dragon, but nonetheless, I kind of understand why people would be in the extreme category. Nonetheless, it is, I think the uptick is probably the key takeaway here, that more people are taking an extreme number of hits than normal, and maybe it's the season, maybe next year we'll find there's less people in this category, and I suspect that we'll find less people in this category, but just this year, You know, for example, I think I took 4 -8s in the course of 6 game weeks over Christmas. It's just one of those things where I just think I'm going to buy tickets to the lottery. And while I'm there, because my objective being as it was, I might as well just sort this thing out as well and prune my team. And that was very successful in some weeks, and other weeks it wasn't at all.
I do wonder to myself if there's like a societal and FPL backdrop as well to the number of people that find themselves in this category that, you know, as you say, there is an awful lot of people who, especially who would be in the active, engaged FPL community, or indeed who follow the subreddit or who follow any of the influencers, the many, many influencers and content creators in all the different spheres that are around at this point, that if they feel like they need to win the shadow box against the teams that are, you know, copycats of people who are doing really well and who, you know, let's say any of the people that you mentioned are probably going to be in the top 100K at least, if not the top 10K in a given year. And if you want to win the shadow box against them, maybe you do need to take, you know, excessive measures to get ahead and just take the risk. And then maybe there is this other kind of societal thing, which is definitely increasing more and more, the desire to be able to show off the wild successes. And, you know, these people who are kind of just playing this more happy-go-lucky approach are definitely being promoted more in social media. Like, definitely the algorithms push these people in front of me more and more than they ever did before. And I do wonder if that is then driving people to try and replicate that to get their chance in the sun.
Yes, be the differential captaincy regents. Right, so let's talk about, basically, what sort of risk profile do you have to end off this session? I guess the key question here is, how useful is it to know what category you've kind of fit into? And for me, I think it's very useful. I think it's really enlightening to get that sense of kind of self-reflection regarding the sort of manager you are. I mean, some people might want to challenge that, you know, maybe show more restraint, as some of the managers in the lower risk section have said. They want to try to either, you know, streamline their approach, or maybe, you know, mimic other managers that we've mentioned who just tend to do very well year after year and rein in those gamblers' instincts as you become more and more sort of attuned to how the season goes. So I think FPL barrister Jeremy was saying that to me as well, that since he started taking FPL seriously, he's taken far less hits than did before, and that certainly makes sense. Others like me kind of just think, oh, hey, you know, that's cool. It's good to see the kind of manager I am. So I'm going to lean into it and just kind of do it and see opportunity where other people see caution. And my results probably should tell you that it's best to be more restrained. But there's more than one way to play this game, that's for sure. And it's good to be able to look into the metaphorical mirror and think, yes, this is me, and decide whether you're uncomfortable or comfortable with what you see and hence what you do about it. I mean, Nick, what do you think the usefulness of this whole exercise?
Yeah, I agree exactly with what you just said. So I think it is definitely useful to have that sort of layer of introspection, and as kind of knowing your risk profile and understanding your risk profile can be cathartic. You know, it might give you that moment of clarity where you actually look at yourself and say, hold on, I do maybe take too many risks in the game. Perhaps if I slow down, perhaps if I avoid those -4s, I might do a little bit better. Or conversely, you might say, actually, you know, I'm too cautious, you know, I don't take enough hits, you know, if I take a few more gambles like some of the other people and fall into a higher category, perhaps I would start doing a bit better with FPL, and perhaps I kind of stick with some of my assets a bit too long in FPL. So yeah, I think it's definitely useful. You know, you can kind of throw it away and say, actually, you know what, I don't care, you know, I'm happy with my risk profile. Or you can take it away and say, maybe I need to change or up my game in a certain way to try and improve.
For me, it's quite interesting because I find that 40% of our respondents are in categories that have taken more hits than me. And certainly more than 40% of our respondents are ahead of me in FPL this season. And so I do wonder if I've been too set in my ways in that accepted wisdom. And I guess this lends itself to the, you know, the benefits of knowing your risk profile and being able to, you know, ground your introspection in some sort of idea of comparator to others. And definitely I've found that I definitely wasn't actually aggressive enough. And this is something I've talked about when we've discussed the objectives a few times, that I felt that maybe I was hamstrung by the objectives and I wasn't chasing transfers in a way that I probably should have. And I guess against the backdrop to COVID, maybe that's more so the point, especially when I was largely playing with a squad that didn't have a deep enough bench from, I guess, probably around the time that the COVID period hit, I was a bit unfortunate with injuries and things. And I always felt like I was just trying to make sure that I had 11 there, rather than trying to make sure that I had a good 11 there, that I just kicked a touch a few too many times. And definitely it's only now that I can really see that I've done that. I felt like I was probably the norm taking, you know, 11 hits. And indeed I am in the most common area in terms of respondents here, with 37.1% of people joining me in that 7 to 12 hit category. But the amount of people that have taken more hits to respond to the situations that have hit their teams, and who, I guess now we're obviously going to have a bit of bias in who's going to respond to us, that they're probably having a good season. But I'm going to say it, that the people who've gone out and taken more hits than me are probably doing better than me this season, and maybe I should have been one of them. But good to know for next season, I guess, from this particular thing. I guess that is the benefits of knowing your risk profile. So another really interesting look at that this season. We've 4 years of it. Next year will be the five. Half a decade of looking at data will be there next season, and we'll do the lads and Lucy will do a particularly good breakdown on that next year, I'm sure, with 5 years of data and hopefully a COVID-free season to compare to COVID season and the non-COVID seasons in the two seasons of the start of this data. So yeah, an interesting section.
Cool. Let's take a break there and move on to the correspondence, listener questions, and general mushy stuff just after this.
Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
All right, so we're back, and it's time to go into the correspondence and questions. A banging correspondence for you this week, alongside after questions. Well, questions are very useful as well. A lot of stuff from the doubles coming up, which probably, to be fair, most pods content this week, but hey, you know, for us in the questions, yeah, you know, always doing differently WGTA, and then some navel gazing mushy stuff at the very end. Quick mention to a couple of meetups, or a triple of meetups I should say, coming up. The first one is the London meetup, the 12th of March. That's via FPL Meet / FPL Nima, who's on the pod a few weeks ago. On the 18th of March, I'll be in Bristol for the Bristol meetup. That's at King Street Brewhouse. Definitely let me know on Twitter or email us on whogotosgmail.com if you want to come along to that one. And North versus South, game week 39, is being pioneered by Benny Blanco. Find out more about that at Benny_Blanco40 on Twitter, GW39, northversussouth.co.uk, all one word, on the interwebs. So to the correspondence, Anthony, and it's a very fitting send-off correspondence this week, isn't it?
It is, yeah, Tom. The correspondence section is your chance to get your long form thoughts, addendums, or whatever else really into whogottheassist@gmail.com, or indeed just DM Tom or me or whoever your thoughts or whatever it was that you wanted to get onto the podcast. You'll be able to still email into whogottheassist@gmail.com, and I'm sure the correspondence section will, ever so often at least, feature in the pod in the future. But this email has come in from Andy Penman, and I have to just thank him in advance for sending this in, because it's borderline ridiculous that this email has come in this week. But yeah, it's great. Hi WGTA team, and especially Stag. Clearly there's only one main concern for Stag's last pod. After Matt Doherty's big haul against Leeds, is there a good reason to include Doherty in our squads, or is Doherty just a red herring? If not Doherty, then who else should we go for over Doherty? Who are Doherty's main rivals in the back of our teams? Is Spurs' defence Doherty or bust? Is Doherty likely to be rotated with Emerson Royale still? Would Doherty be a better choice than someone like Digne with the doubles coming up? Is Doherty likely to play two games in the future Spurs doubles? Doherty, 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 Doherty. Many thanks, and see you, and all the very best to you, Stag. Sláinte from all your FPL-loving Celtic cousins across the sea. Or Celtic cousins across the sea in this case. Andy Penman. There you go, Tom. You've got a challenge from that. You know what the challenge is.
Matt Doherty.
Not too bad. Nick?
Doherty.
Oh, perfect from Nick. Oh, outstanding. Outstanding.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, I think it's actually hilarious that he's back in the FPL kind of relevant sphere just as you're leaving.
He is genuinely
top scorer this week.
Yeah, was he?
18 points. Did the Holy Trinity of a goal, assist, and clean sheet.
What a guy.
Just for you. Just for your send off.
So good of Matt Doherty to make an intervention just in time as well. Like his Spurs career was kind of seemed to be teetering on the blink, and now he's suddenly kind of got himself going again. I'm delighted to see it. And indeed, to be honest, like, he does fit that Conte system quite well. And if he is starting to play well, then he actually will be the FPL player that I guess we hoped he'd be when he signed for Spurs originally under Jose Mourinho. He could genuinely be a great pick into these final weeks. Nick, especially as a Spurs fan, I guess, what do you think of Matt Doherty as an FPL prospect?
Yeah, I think he's one to keep an eye on, certainly. I think he's probably, I'd say he's probably got the place right now ahead of Royale, just because Royale's been pretty damn terrible since he signed. I've not been overly impressed with his crossing ability. And on the same, on the left-hand flank, I think both Sessegnon and Doherty actually linked up really well in that last game. So I think Sess is probably ahead of Reguilon. And they both played tonight, and I haven't watched the game, but they lost typically in Spurs fashion against Middlesbrough, so maybe they'll lose the place. So I don't know how they performed in that game, so I haven't had a chance to kind of look. But they do have a double up in 29, United and Brighton, which is all right, and a possible game week 30 now because of that loss against Middlesbrough. It's not been confirmed. Depends what happens in the West Ham versus Southampton game, but certainly if Spurs do have a game in 30, then people will be looking at the likes of Doherty in defence, because they've got a decent run as well after that. You know, they're playing much faster than Villa, Brighton, Brentford, Leicester. So, you know, Spurs coverage in the back. I've got my favourite old-timer, Ben Davis, right now, picking up one-pointers and five-pointers for me. Bit of a dodgy pick. But I think if you are looking at the Spurs defence, I would probably target one of the wing-backs and just watch and wait for the next couple of games as well. So hopefully they can keep their place.
Yeah, and that's the big thing, isn't it? Just watching and waiting. But from game week 29, I think it would be a unique position to be in. Somebody who's looking to not buy a player just because he can't pronounce them on this podcast. If I just completely let him go. It seems like Royale with cheese just hasn't really paid off for anybody. And as Anthony said, it seems to fit the system. So why not? Why not indeed? I feel like he might be somebody to fit in. Matt Doherty.
Oh, Jesus.
I remember your significant other just saying that the London lad murdered it, massacred it.
That was great that time we were playing the voice notes back and forth. Tom was really trying to get it, and FPL King was back and forth with us about the pronunciation and everything. And then, yeah, my SO, she really ripped Tom apart at the time. It was great.
Unbelievable. I wish we had things which were difficult to pronounce, but sadly not. Right, let's move on to the main questions this week. Will the correspondence section return after this? I mean, who knows? I might kill it. I might just spend... Anthony has got nothing to say about it anymore, so I might kill it. But up to you whether you do want to continue sending your questions in to gotresist@gmail.com. Next one is from FPL Claret this week. And FPL Claret normally is somebody who writes in to us each year about the risk profiles thing. But he did say that he lost his account, sadly, earlier on this year. So he's got a ghost team at the moment. But normally he's the kind of guy, I saw him in Manchester, and I've spoken to him a couple of years, and he said, you know, normally he takes a hit a week. So similar to our listener, Dave Glass. But he asks, you know, what does FPL risk actually look like to us? Is it hits alone? Can it be punting on differentials? Is dangerous captains, things like that, also risk? And I guess, you know, risk is what you make of it to me. I mean, I know, for example, all those things that Jimmy said about, you know, he takes loads of risks every year. But to me, I think it's always EO-centric. So going against it in terms of captain or not covering a highly owned player, I think is what risk actually does mean to me more. I mean, yeah, okay, we use hits as a proxy. Understanding risk profiles in the main section, but the way I look at it tends to be about EO and things you do, because arguably you could be taking a hit, but you could be taking a hit to bring in Salah for the triple captain. So does that still count as being risky? Probably not, but nonetheless, over the course of the season, all these things mount up. If you look at it on a game week by game week basis, in one game week, yeah, okay, I could be taking a hit, but I'm not particularly risky. But throughout the course of the season, you could argue, well, all right, if you were being risk averse, you could have just kept Salah on your bench, knowing the fact that he'd always want him back eventually, just weather it with the players that you've got. And chip strategies, quickly, he mentioned that too, Jimmy. I just don't think chip strategy is that risky. Obviously, things like bench boosting or triple captaining on the road week is one thing, but a lot of the time you get to a point around the 20s where, you know, things become very customized. I've mentioned in the last few pods to your team, and generalized advice, which works out very well early in the season, doesn't really count as much anymore. What do you think, Nick, about risk in general as the pioneer of the main sort of risk profiles thing?
Yeah, I agree with your points. I think ultimately we use hit because that's the easiest and most quantifiable metric for kind of calculating risk. But certainly I think all those different elements fall into an individual's risk profile. So going for those differential captains, going for those low owned players, as opposed to the highly owned assets. If you're targeting lowly owned players and captaining those week in, week out, then, you know, ultimately you are a bigger risk taker than someone who's just going to sit it on Salah. And it goes into alternative chip strategies as well. If you bench boost or triple captain in a single week, or maybe if you triple captain Trent Alexander-Arnold as opposed to Mo Salah in a double game week, Anthony, perhaps that falls into a different risk strategy as well.
Absolutely. I think that's definitely coming to mind with me, really, that it is the captaincy of all of these that has the biggest effect. And of course, if you bring in the triple captaincy chip, you can definitely exaggerate that even further. But I do feel like, by and large, as what Tom was saying, that when it comes to chip strategies, whilst you can really be gone alone, it's probably not as likely to have a massive effect on your rank as, for example, going for low ownership players, just because by virtue of that, you're probably leaving out players that have a high EO that are really going to punish you long term. And especially with the captaincy, because the herd largely is doing the obvious thing. And so by not doing the obvious thing, sure, there is the positive chance that it's going to work out for you, but the negatives are oh so huge. And the effect can be absolutely detrimental. Most obviously illustrated, of course, with the triple captaincy when it doesn't work out. But overall, I think it is just, of all the risks, the biggest of them. And I know we've done a whole pod talking about hits, as Tom said, the proxy for risk. But often what you're doing with a hit is it's probably sensible. It's probably not going to be a huge cost in EO terms. And indeed, like, just literally, it's not a huge hit in terms of the number of points that you take out. Where there's a real risk involved when you take a hit is when you're hitting out a player that has a high EO. So for example, earlier in the season, when people sold Benrahma early, that was actually quite a risky transfer, because if you continued to bang, you were really going to be punished for it. Indeed, people who transferred out Salah of any given period really suffered for it. I think I transferred him out early on in some sort of premium roulette that really didn't work out. That was a huge risk that didn't work out as well. But in that form, I would kind of see it as, you know, that's in the low ownership EO, low ownership player category, as opposed to the hit that was the inherently risky aspect of that. So risk for me is largely low ownership players and captaincy changes. But as Tom said, that is all grounded in the greater shroud of EO and the effect that going against EO will have on you.
Oh, a good example of kind of selling for a player who perhaps is a bit of a risk based in EO is Bowen or Noen. So FPL Yogi asks, is it overthinking to sell Bowen, or is it overthinking to keep Bowen? I mean, Nick, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I understand why a few people are selling Bowen this week. They do have a tough fixture against Liverpool, and there's so many players out there in a crowded market of midfield assets with double game weeks. So, you know, we've got a question of free hits. We'll talk about a few of these characters in a bit anyway. But, you know, the likes of Rafinha and Coutinho, Joe Willock even, kind of putting their names in the hat. Is there space for Bowen in our midfield? And, you know, he has had a couple of blanks, but he has been one of the most reliable players over the course of the season. So it's very much an if and but. And I think, you know, if you've got a lot of money tied up in him as well, you might be a bit more reticent to sell him. So some people might have made, you know, 0.7, 0.8 in terms of transfer value since originally transferring him in. So there is that kind of loss of money if you do sell him. But it is a tough one because he is the second highest scoring player over the course of the season in midfield. He's had an absolutely excellent season, a real breakout season. But I think with West Ham's fixtures, and I was going to say a blank in 30, but now that's a question mark as well, which we also need to throw into the mix. So wait and see what happens against Southampton. But if they do have the blank in 30, they've got a tough game against Liverpool next, and there's so many other players that
look like decent prospects with double game weeks coming up in 28 and 29, then you know, is there space for Bowen? Perhaps not in our team. So at least in the short term, you can easily get him back in for the run in game week 31, perhaps. So, you know, I don't understand if people want to sell him in the short term. I don't think it's the end of the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's stick or twist, really. It's a bit like his teammate, Antonio. How long is too long to hold the man? And who are you missing out on by holding him? With Antonio, it was a case of not missing out on much because the forwards have been absolute toss. But maybe with Bowen, as Nick said, you know, the likes of Rafinha, Coutinho, they've got their names in the midfield mix. Jota, when he's back, perhaps would be in the mix too. Willock, perhaps. And also increasingly Leicester midfielders. Madison scored tonight. And there are three games for them left to be rescheduled. So maybe these players may be worth considering over Bowen. Next week, he's got Liverpool away. So most people like to bench him then. He's got Villa at home in game 29, so maybe that's a field. Then there's a blank in game week 30 and a few okay games, as Nick referenced after that, in Everton, Brentford and Burnley before the fixtures stiffen in game week 34. I think either holding or selling is valid here, which is why it's a bit of a pain. Like, he's still decently owned. He's still very capable. I mean, versus Wolves, he was still in a lot of good positions. The ball never got to him. For example, when Suchet scored, he was literally, you know, the next man over. So he could have put home the winner rather than Suchet. Indeed, when we were watching, Nick, when I was around your house the other day, I thought the Bowen had scored when Suchet had scored. I stand what I said before, though, about West Ham being easier for teams to plan for now because of a lack of depth. And that could be your justification to sell. They're not going to kind of take things apart like they used to. I mean, I've got a Buendia problem personally. So I'm keeping and benching him, I think, because I've got another player to take out. But if you don't have that problem and you fancy double game weaker or somebody else sort of team out and an opportunity cost of keeping him is not missing out on that sort of player, it's justifiable to sell. As I said in the solo pod last week, he's no longer untouchable, I don't think. Anthony, what do you think on Bowen?
I think I'll be largely parroting what you guys have said at this point, that whilst over, you know, a good solid 10 to 12 game week period, it was Bowen and Green Arrow. I'm not quite sure if that's going to continue to be the case at this point. That, as you say, there are compelling other options coming, you know, out of the woodwork. There are arguments against keeping him from a West Ham perspective, A, with the fixtures, and B, with just general depth and overload that they're dealing with at the moment with fixtures and the like. And even just, there has been a bit of a slowdown too. You just don't feel like they have the same momentum for that top four place that they felt like they had when, I guess, Bowen was going well and when there tended to be someone else going well alongside him. And I think this has kind of been the problem for West Ham, is that having two players on song in at a consistent period has proven more and more elusive as time went on. That, you know, early on it was Antonio and Benrahma, and then yeah, Antonio kept going, and the, you know, some of the others kind of started to chime in, especially Bowen started to chime in. And then you started to find that Bowen was almost kind of running it single-handedly with a random ramshackle group of others chiming in. And now it just seems like it feels like it's drying up more and more. And I guess with that in mind, there's plenty of reasons to sell. I think I'd be probably erring more towards sell than keep. And indeed, this is a question that I have to ask myself on my own side. He's still in mine at the moment. And as well, actually, with value, there isn't as huge... especially as his price will probably drop a bit more from where it is right now.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. All right. Let's move on to the main sort of... thrust of the FPL community this week, which is about double game week 28. Karim Tizer asked for some sort of free hit 28 picks from us, which should be quite useful because Nick's on a free hit. And he also asked if Broyo Adams is the Saints striker of choice, which we've kind of come on to. The market force is obviously favouring Scotland's Shea Adams at the moment. And Jeff Pedder asked as well, if you're a wild card in this week, how many 28-28 doublers would you have and available in how many 28 doublers and available in 30 players would you focus on versus those sort of core foundations of City, Liverpool, Chelsea, etc.? And how much are you going to think about game week 30 if you're doing that? I mean, let's take the free hit picks for, at the moment. I'm going to do my usual thing of throwing in one from left field, and that is Ryan Fraser, 5.3 million at the moment, a hero of past years. There's a few reasons for this. One is that Newcastle are attacking a lot down the left flank, as per Chris Waugh in The Athletic. Unfortunately, for all the Fraser's crossing, Wood has been poor at converting them. Joelinton has done, though. but his data over the last six game weeks for a 5.3 player who seems very nailed is really decent. So he and JWP are joint top for successful crosses over the last 6 weeks. He's created 13 chances in the last 6 weeks. He's equal in terms of non-pen XA to KDB over the last six. And he's got the top XGI for players under 6 million over the last six game weeks. Unfortunately, their game against Crystal Palace is now a blank, because Palace beat Stoke 2-1 tonight. Nonetheless, with double-double at 5.3, he could be one that you could throw into a free hit on 28 and feel probably okay about. The double is not that bad at all. So, yeah, he could be one. Nick, are you considering Ryan Fraser for your free hit on 28? How are you generally setting up?
Yeah, I did think about Ryan Fraser. I'm actually finding that I've got a lot of money to play around with on this free hit. And it's mainly driven by the teams that do have the double. They're not kind of the Manchester City's, the Chelsea's, the Liverpool's. Well, there might be a Chelsea double, but we have to wait and see on that one. But it's kind of the middling size, isn't it? It's the Aston Villas, the Southamptons, the Wolves and the Newcastle. So I'm finding that I've got a bit of money to play around with. And it's just weighing up how many single game weekers I have. So at the moment, I have got sort of Salah, Son and Trent in there as well, and I just think those are kind of the key assets for the single game weekers. But apart from that, I've gone for the doublers, so triple on Aston Villa especially. Leeds, they seem really poor at the moment, so I think I want to target them, even though they've sold Bielsa. Maybe they'll, you know, tidy up a bit. not sold Bielsa, they've sacked Bielsa, perhaps they're going to be you know, trying to be a bit more defensively solid in their next games. I still think they're a team to target. So we've got Coutinho, Jacob Ramsey I've actually thrown into the mix. He's had a real breakout season. And I've got Luka Dean in defence as well. In terms of the Southampton question, I've actually gone for the double up right now up front. So I have put both Brewer and Shea Adams in there. And like you mentioned, Tom, there's not really a wealth of decent forwards to kind of pick from. Especially for this double as well. So obviously Jimenez is one that appeared in the market forces, but I'm not overly sold by him and his recent performances. So I wasn't too sure about him, and I've actually gone for Adams and Brolier. But in terms of Wolves, it's all about the defenders for me. So I've gone for sort of Sa in goal, targeting hopefully a double clean sheet from him. And Roman Saiss would be my sort of Wolves defender of choice. So I think for Wolves, it's more about the defence. With Aston Villa, the combination, the midfield and the attack. And then with the Southampton, I think the attack, the forwards is probably the best position to target for Southampton. And also in defence, you could have a kind of Bednarek type character or Livramento, who's obviously been performing pretty well so far this season. So, yeah, I think for me, the teams to target mainly Southampton, Aston Villa and Wolves. You could throw a sprinkle of Newcastle in there. So instead of Fraser, I was actually looking at your man, Joe Willock, who's starting to re-emerge again. He's got a couple goals and an assist. It's actually his first returns of the season. So he's been very, very quiet over the course of the season compared to last season where he got signed, I mean, January and scored 8 goals. It was just sort of ridiculous run of form. But this season's been terrible for him until the last 3 game weeks where he might be hitting that purple patch again. So I really like Willock. I think he's perhaps the one I'll go for over the wee man, even though I did see, you know, he was very created those crosses down that left-hand side in that last game. But I think he's also subject to a little bit of rotation under Howe. So I think Willock's the answer for me.
What do you think about, Chelsea get a double game week if Chelsea beat Luton tomorrow and Norwich lose Liverpool. I mean, where are you with the Chelsea players? I mean, obviously this is all a little bit sort of hypothetical at the moment. I mean, would you be kind of thinking, oh, Rudiger's the one to throw in? Would you be kind of looking at Mason Mount? I mean, what are your initial thoughts on that at the moment?
Yeah, so I think if Chelsea do have that double, then I probably would go for a character like Rudiger. So as I mentioned, I do have the Wolves double up right now, and I'd probably sacrifice one of them to get a Chelsea defender in instead. In terms of the midfielders, you know, I'm not overly sold. I did like Ziyech, but he's flagged now, so that's a little bit of a concern. Didn't play at the weekend. And Mason Mount, I don't know. I think there are other better options that I've mentioned in midfield. I'm not convinced, to be honest. I think the thing about Mount or someone like that could be, if you got him in, he could be a captain option as well. So that kind of, you have to throw that into the mix as well when you're thinking about who the captaincy is for this week, because it's not like there's a real hardcore selection of, you know, double game weeks. There's no like obvious pick. Currently, I've got on Coutinho actually, so I think, yeah, you could go for Mount, but I just think, you know, as I said before, the midfield's already a bit of a crowded house, especially if I'm going to have Son and Salah in there as well.
With Chelsea, I'd nearly even say that a Chelsea defender could quite easily be captaincy material, just kind of for the paucity of options elsewhere. It's kind of the big kind of question there is just trying to pick out the right one. If you were to do it, like Rudiger would probably be the obvious choice, but maybe you might want to take a risk on one of the wing backs. I know there's kind of questions about Reece James's fitness and things that maybe would mean that he certainly wouldn't be the one you'd look to, but you know, there is an upside to him if he even plays a single game in the double game week. He'd be an interesting one. I guess looking more broadly, Willock was definitely the Newcastle player that stood out to me. The Wolves defence is, I guess, as you've kind of noted yourself, Nick, is probably the way to go. I've got Saïss in my own team currently. I could totally see how someone who is free hitting or indeed wildcarding would look to get more into that Wolves defence. Like, they are one of the teams that play in game week 30 as well, if you're not someone who's going to use a free hit then. So that's kind of the extra bonus with them. The Villa players, I'd be slow to get onto. Like, I can understand the Jacob Ramsey hype, if only because he's such a good enabler and obviously has had a particularly good season. But kind of consistent returns have been kind of lacking from any of Villa's attacking players, really. Coutinho, obviously, there's a certain intrigue to putting him in the team and a real nostalgia to how good he used to be. But kind of there have been fleeting glimpses of brilliance in his time at Villa. But I don't know if you could say that there's enough data there to point at consistency. And then when you talk about the forwards, that's the real question here. Like, that has been the question nearly all season. Like, is there any good forwards anywhere? That's where you could start to look to your single game week options as runners. Like, even Leeds, for example, are playing Leicester. Like, there'd be some temptation to go for a Vardy, who obviously scored tonight, or you know, obviously then you'd look to your Madisons and stuff as well that you'd probably want to have on your side. And then the Manchester Derby, I don't think is a game I'd be avoiding. Like, you know, Cancelo or someone could quite easily come in with a haul. Like, at least it's one of those days that you can look to the City team and go, okay, they're probably going to play their best players, and in my eyes, these are their best players, and so therefore I will select them. So a Foden, for example, is someone who I would think at least would play against Manchester United, and now trying to get myself into Guardiola's head. But like, that could genuinely be a bloodbath for United. It really, really could. And I guess I wouldn't kind of cast aside players like that lightly. Actually, ditto Tottenham as well, playing against Everton, who are still kind of not going all that well under Lampard. I'd be kind of interested to see like a Kane or a Son. This does feel like one of those trick double game weeks where it could be so easy to start really pumping up your team full of Chris Woods and Ryan Frazers and Joe Willocks, but in the end it could be the single game week options, the tried and tested models, that actually run away with things in the end.
Yeah, it's just another trap, isn't it? Triple up on Newcastle, probably not the best idea.
I've seen a few of those hanging around, that's for sure. I mean, if you're wildcarding like Jeff, or if you're kind of in a non chip playing sort of mode, I think definitely a few players, like as you said, the Leicester players could be ones worth looking at. And Madison or Harvey Barnes could be worth just looking at if you're not looking to kind of bulk up on double game week players. They've got three unscheduled games. They've got a game in game week 30. It saves you a transfer to buy a player like that right now. And Madison's the only Leicester player to break 100 points, scored tonight off the bench, and potentially Vardy too. I think he might be, you know, if he could do free hit in game week 30, he could probably be the biggest rank threat, because I think he'd be the biggest captain for people who are free hitting then. I think the casual core will look at that and kind of think, oh, I haven't got many players. Oh, I've got a free hit. I'm going to do that. That's what people want to do. I'll probably share your kind of reticence on the Villa players, to be honest. I mean, maybe Coutinho is a bit of an obvious pickup for a few people. West Ham the next week perhaps isn't as great, but nonetheless, he's very easy to move out for a Madison or something like that. So it could be a very good kind of two-week pickup. Don't mind Newcastle players, as I said. And I suppose, you know, we've got a bit of information to get on the FA Cup as we stand now. But elsewhere, I mean, Rafinha is a great example of a player that you'd probably be picking up on a wild card. He'd be totally nailed to put on a wild card for me, because he's got double game week. He's got Norwich in game week 29 and he's got a game week 30 fixture. I think that's probably, you know, the holy trinity really of a pickup. There's maybe a cheap Wolves defender, as Nick mentioned, maybe one or two, maybe Siren goal, again, with a double, a bench, perhaps in game week 29, but they've got Everton, so it's probably okay. Plus their game week 30 fixture. So there's a lot kind of going on there, I suppose, in the next double game week. And a lot of it seems to be about managing risk, as we've seen this free hit in game week 28. In game week 27, how much should we really be folding towards a fairly mere double game week? Should we be full prey to people who are kind of hyping up the players because they tend to have a double game week? And Nick, you mentioned earlier on about maybe Jimenez being one of those you're a bit not sure about. Probably that's right, isn't it? Maybe he's the sort of player who people are looking at and thinking, oh, he's got two home fixtures, he's a striker, he could be well worth including. But no, he's been low-key pretty crap for a long time. But nonetheless, you know, could you do that honest gym sort of thing over 2 weeks? Crystal Palace and Watford at home. Would you bet against him getting, you know, 5 points in each of those games and being there for a 20-point captain? I don't know. Either way, I just feel like it's a very underwhelming double game week in a lot of ways. I think 29 is obviously very good because you've got Liverpool, you've got Arsenal, you've got quite a few players who are doing it. Chelsea are probably the big kind of wild cards with this double game week, if they get one, and we can't speak to that right now. But yeah, it's definitely, I'm envious for a free hit on some levels, but on other levels, I'm not that envious. And let's kind of just do transfers and captains now. And Nick, maybe it's worth just running for your team one more time and kind of just telling us a little bit about your general sort of mix that you've got.
Yeah, sure. So as I said, I don't actually have any Chelsea players in there at the moment because there's not been a double confirmed, but it will be subject to change, certainly, if that Chelsea double is confirmed. So currently in goal, I've got Sa, and then also got Saïss from Wolves in defence, alongside Trent and Luka Dean in midfield. I've gone for the five-man midfield of Son, Salah, Willock, Ramsey and Coutinho. And then a double Southampton attack of Adams and Broya. Just to round up the team on the bench, I've still got Foster, the sort of backup goalkeeper, Cancelo, Bednarek, probably didn't change that to Livramento, and good old Emmanuel Dennis, couldn't get rid of him, so I just put him there as the third sub. If he has to be called upon, he's there. Or maybe it's just to win the Sterling Shield this year.
You've got too much money to spend, though. I mean, I kind of feel
that's
like
the problem.
I feel like you could have a Kane instead of, you know, one of the Southampton strikers. I feel like that's something you could do. Or as Anthony mentioned earlier on, playing Cancelo and just kind of just changing it to be someone you're not worried about benching could be worth doing. I mean, Rafinha, I suppose, is probably the big miss here, because, like, all right, Jesse March is in, the translator has been sacked unceremoniously, so could be, you know, pinning voodoo dolls all over the place to see Leeds lose two in a row. But nonetheless, you know, surely Jesse March is going to come in and kind of think, well, Rafinha is probably my best way of keeping my team up and making sure I keep my job. So the next two games could be worth owning Rafinha for, right?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, certainly the Norwich game looks pretty good in 29. I don't know. There's so many different players you can try and fit in. Leicester and Aston Villa. It's an all right double, isn't it? It's an all right one. But I'm actually more interested in the teams that are playing Leeds. That's why I kind of gone for this sort of Aston Villa pivot. Perhaps I'm putting my hopes in the wrong team. Maybe I'll shift it around a little bit.
But, you could do Ward-Prowse as well over one of the strikers and just kind of hope for that kind of top bins free kick Hail Mary.
Yeah, but then there's no other forwards that I want. That's the thing. You mentioned Kane. I've already got Son in there. You know, as I said, Jimenez, I'm not sold out. I'm not sold on you. Maybe I'll go for like a sort of a 4-5-1 approach, perhaps, and just have a solid
one of the lads.
They've only got a single game, we know. That's the point. I'm trying to attack the double. So.
Yeah. I suppose you're attacking the game week. If you take the double aspect out of it, you're definitely getting in a differential if you go for one of those Leicester forwards.
It's an option, but yeah, I think Vardy's still coming back from injury as well. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Probably not one of those. It'll take him a while, and I think even you know when they got the doubles, he's going to play one of them, isn't he? Because he's you know, older than us. So dear me, can he play both those games? Who knows. Maybe Thiago Silva will, maybe Vardy will, maybe they'll surprise us, but I very much doubt it. All right. Anthony, or is it me? No, it's Anthony. Where are you sat?
Like, so this, I'm not going to be free hitting or anything like it in this coming game week. And so I guess I'm kind of, I find myself continually backed into the corner that I set myself up for long, long ago at this point with poor decisions. And so Foster in goal has a double game week at least, benching De Gea. A back four that I'm relatively content with. I brought in Saiss knowing that this double game week was coming for him and he has good fixtures. Cancelo, who I'm happy to keep there and won't be benching. I have Veltman, who's away to Newcastle. And to be honest, Veltman has actually been a disaster in many different ways for me since I brought him into my team. And he's actually kind of on ice there. And then I have Trent Alexander-Arnold as well, who I'll be very happy to keep in it. In midfield right now, I've got Salah, and I just have the captaincy sitting on him, kind of as a, at least as a placeholder. But I might go for someone else. Like, I'd be actually quite tempted to go for Saiss this game week. And he's probably the most likely captain for me right now. Considering I'm at a rank of 562k, I might as well. Then the rest of my midfielders, I have Bowen away to Liverpool, as we were talking about. He's another player who feels on ice for me and could move on. Only that I also have Bruno Fernandes. And whilst I was talking up Fernandes and his FPL prospects generally, indeed United's, because they do, like in some ways, look quite good. In other ways, they look not good enough at all. But Bruno just feels to me like the most likely of the United players to kind of get going. And so setting him on maybe feels foolish in some ways, but in other ways, like, he is the reason why, for example, I don't have someone like Son in my side. And I think maybe in the overall scheme of things, that's what I need to rectify. And so that'll be the more likely transfer, is to find a way to get Son in.
Yeah.
If that means selling Fernandes, fair enough. Saka as well, I have in midfield. He's going to stay there. And then up top, I have Broya and Dennis right now, leaving me with a bench of Weghorst, Alan and Laporte. I'm happy. I could double up on this City defence. And to be perfectly honest with you, I think it might be a grand plan. But I just haven't got myself set up to do that right now. I'd love to get a different forward in, but as Nick was kind of going through, there's just no really good option there. Like, okay, I could go to Adams, but I kind of feel like I'd be just rearranging deck chairs there. The likes of, you know, the Leicester lads, like a Daka or someone who is playing regularly lately, would be interesting because he plays that Leeds game. But is Operation Target Leeds going to be continue to be a go under Jesse March, under new management with a new manager bounce? I'm not sure. I think it will be, to be honest, because I've felt that Leeds team was seriously overperforming with, you know, largely a championship first 11 at the moment with their injuries. And I'm not sure what sort of miracle Jesse March can really work. Like, he is suited to the squad and he's suited to adapt Bielsa's tactics. I just wonder if the tools that he has at his disposal right now are good enough to turn things around. And like, Leicester need to get momentum going if they're A, to keep their manager, and B, if they're to get anywhere near achieving something this season, even if they just want to have momentum as they run through in Europe. And this is a pretty good chance for them to kind of do that. And so I do think with their fixtures, with their doubles to come as well, like getting in a Leicester player wouldn't necessarily be a bad idea. So I'm weighing that up as well. So Son is my number one priority, a risky captain, perhaps Saiss. But largely, I'm not going to do anything major to this side.
Yeah, exactly. And can Jesse March uninjure the key players? Don't know about that one. And finally, for me, I don't know what the manifestations of the moves I'm making are quite yet, because I'm not sure how 28 or 29 are going to look. The FA Cup games or everything, really. It could be Salah captain, could be a double game weaker like Rafinha. If I buy him, it shouldn't make sense to do so, like I said earlier. Or maybe even, you know, Jimenez or Coutinho, if I go on with them, or maybe even Shea Adams if I go mad and buy him. I know the results of the rest to know. There's cockroaches I've got here, King and Edouard. I need to probably squash Edouard this week. I might bench King as I've got in the setup here. As I could have him set up here, for his double, I don't know. And the Buendia experiment sadly needs to come to an end. There's lots of configurations for what I could do, but yeah, there's very little I'm going to probably do. I'm probably going to take a minus four max. Probably going to have five double game weekers. So Foster, Kilman, Dean, and whoever I replace Buendia and Edouard with, and that would give me the five. Maybe, you know, Jimenez and Willock, something like that. And I have six single game weekers, Trent, Robertson and Salah from Liverpool, Cancelo, Sakabus, Watford and Kane. And I'm probably going to bench King because I'm probably going to replace Edouard and just get rid of that guy. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean, the captaincy is probably a bit of an interesting one, as we've all kind of alluded to. I may well just leave it on Salah, to be honest, unless I bring in somebody that I particularly care about. But I just kind of feel like it's such an underwhelming double game week that captaining Salah against West Ham and just kind of expecting that he's going to get his customary seven or eight probably will be enough. Right, let's move into the sentimental mushy stuff. Feel free to end the pod here if you don't want to hear any of this, but hopefully you do. Hopefully
see you never. So.
Oh boy. Right, 200, here we are. 200 pod reflections. So it's been a long time, hasn't it? Both of you, especially Nick. I feel like I've lost count of all the pods up until now. I think I spent ages kind of removing a few pods where it was kind of just like, oh, sorry, there's no pod this week or whatever, to come 200 this week. And I feel like if somebody said to me, you know, what's your favorite pod? Because it's all kind of mushed into one after a while. Like every week we do this and it all ends up being kind of like one thing. I really struggle. I maybe nominate the Paper Science Summer Pod Special with Anthony this year.
They were top notch.
The Paper Science one especially was just so much fun, I think. Mm-hmm. I think in general, I'm just very proud that we've stuck to the principles we started with and continue with you, Anthony, and things like that. You know, evidence-based conversation, which doesn't rely on perception or overt bias, providing all the information without advising to do this, that, the other. I mean, basically, we're going to teach you how to fish rather than giving you a fish. Why should you consider buying this player rather than which player should I pick? Usual stuff. I mean, obviously, times have changed. I've got less time to put into this now, and obviously co-hosts have come and gone. I mean, Anthony were leaving today, Nick, obviously things changed too, but I fundamentally enjoy it still most of the time. And it's been such a nice addition to my life, I suppose. I mean, we're no longer the hot kids on the block, we're now the old men with terrible beards, not looking at you, Nick, who've been here for a while. But it's been really interesting to see that transition take place. I made loads of good friends, and I think just, you know, it's a thankless task. I'm not the kind of guy who's going to be there at 1 a.m. on Twitter going, oh, I'm working so late on FPL. Oh, look at me. Oh, woe is me. I mean, I can't imagine how many hours I've actually gone into it. But I think as long as, you know, your average listener enjoys it, then to some extent that's good enough for me, yeah, basically. Nick, I mean, you've been on, I think actually Nicola is the number one appearer. I think she's appeared on 200 out of 200 pods. So please congratulate her this tomorrow morning. But how do you feel about reaching 200?
Yeah, she's got that 100% record, hasn't she? Yeah. Very impressive there from the start.
The Connor Cody of WGTA.
Basically, yeah, getting that 6 points week in, week out. I mean, it's an amazing achievement. And, you know, especially shout out to yourself, Tom. I know you've spent many a late night kind of working on the pod, drinking copious amounts of stouts, editing all our screw ups and all our mess ups to actually make it seem like we're talking sense most of the time. So yeah, you've done an excellent job, and obviously organizing everything week in, week out. You know, the pod wouldn't be here without you. So yeah, congratulations on the 200, and congratulations obviously to yourself, Anthony, sort of taking up the mantle in my absence, and we'll get on to your goodbye section in a little bit. But yeah, certainly feels like a little bit of an end of an era podcast, a little bit special. So it's great to kind of have us all here for this momentous occasion.
Yeah, it's like it's 5 years in July that the pod's been going. Obviously, you know, 200. It's pretty much 4 years on that. But by the time you actually get in terms of calendar years, it's July or June is going to bring you to the full 5 years of the pod. So that's an incredible amount of longevity, I guess, in a sphere that is actually emerging as well. Like we talk about this as if, you know, we joke we're the old men of FPL, and I even throw myself into that given I've been content creating in FPL since 2015. it's like 7 years of my life. Like I've not done anything for 7 years. I haven't even attended the same school for 7 years because you move through. So it's kind of incredible, you know, the amount of time there is. And yet still, this is something that is still emerging. The content continues to get better. The sphere continues to grow. The number of people that are in it continues to grow. And I guess to maintain relevance in this it's a credit to the two of ye lads for starting it, Tom for like continuing to like shepherd it through the dark nights, editing it and stuff. It's not easy to do, having done a bit of editing of it myself, especially when you were in Australia and seldom really outside of that. It's not easy to do it. It takes a lot of dedication, and so just like fair play to you for doing it. And thanks again as well for having me as part of it.
All right, well, let's move on to Anthony Goodbye. So sadly, this is the last pod where Anthony is the co-host. I'm sure he'll be back eventually to show up, tell us how he's doing with renewed fervor. I'm sure he'll be like, oh, you know, well, I'm top 10k this year.
Yeah, so watch that happen. The curse will just leave me, and then I will just suddenly ascend to the top 1k, and we'll all be like, wow, what happened to that guy?
Yeah, I mean, Harry, who's coming on next week, he texted me saying, yeah, I've got a red arrow on a free hit, and Deucey's been having a terrible few weeks, so I think it's definitely a curse. But I mean, for your leaving, we've got a few things. So we've got a few people who have written in, a few people who have sent messages as well for you. I've got a couple that I'm going to play to you from a fellow Irishman, actually, who have taken upon themselves to send you a voice message. The first one is from Paddy, at FPL Viking, and this is what he said.
Well, Stag, the time has come to say goodbye, or maybe just see you later. I heard you're getting a boot high for the fucking Doherty mispronunciations, and look, at the start I was a wee bit sad, but I know Tom has to do what's right for the podcast, and I know that you'll accept it. But see you later, brother, and see you soon for a pint of stout. Good luck.
Lovely of him to do that. That's great. Actually, credit to King as well, just with the work he's been doing with his raising money for, I think it's Irish Cancer Society, and his swims every single day. I think he hit the year anniversary there lately of having swam in the sea every single day. Like, That's incredible, and fair play to him and all the work that he's doing, and thanks to him for sending that in as well.
Yep. And Steve, who was on last week, FPL Fairy, sent through this.
Hi guys, just a note to wish my fellow Irishman FPL Stag all the best following his retirement from the Who Got the Assist podcast. You've done your country proud over the past few seasons, Anthony, and no doubt listeners from all around the world will miss your pronunciation of words for Tom and Nick. Looking forward to a few pints of Guinness later this year.
Our friend Alan, desperate can do Zan. I'll always remember him as the man who brought down Mendy's top manager with his Duffy triple captain brainwashing. It was the most diabolical scheme ever enacted.
Thanks, Alan.
Yeah, Chris Noli said Anthony's been great in the pod. Good chemistry between the two of you, and I always enjoyed his ramblings. Alex Bull, who's been on the pod a few times, said I always enjoyed the email section he brought in. What was it called, Tom? He loved the fact that I wasn't entirely 100% sure about it, which Anthony played on. Maybe we should continue it in Anthony's honor. Stag's correspondence corner, he reckons. Stag in the corner, ants emails, some central things.
Maybe to workshop that more.
Yeah, maybe. At Bananas Maldonado, Matt said, this isn't particularly funny, but he said that when we went on our Slack Zoom party, he was struck by how curious Anthony was about other people. Being three sheets to the wind may have promoted it, so obviously none of you know this, but when we did like a Slack meetup during the pandemic, and Anthony had two bottles of wine during that period. but Matt said he was struck by how genuinely interested he was in what other people did and what they thought about things. And he said, I admire his intellectual curiosity and interpersonal kind of capacities. And he said that's sadly a bit too uncommon to be interested in what other people think and do. So he will miss you on the pod.
Oh, can Matt write like a thing for my LinkedIn? Thanks, man. Yes. That's really kind of you.
A friend of the pod, Adam Pritchard, wrote in and said, in times to be earnest, Stag's dry wit was always the perfect mix for the pod. His approach to representing data and his analysis in a clear way and made it comprehensible to lad artists like me. Plus, his dulcet Irish tones helped soften the blow on occasion. He ridiculed the planned transfer I'd already thought of.
Thanks, Adam.
One further thing Death Seek and Doozan would want to say is that the other genuine thing I would say is that what's always struck me about Anthony is his patriotism. Patriotism has somewhat been co-opted by the right wing across the world these days, but Stag has always been able to be proud of being Irish by being a decent guy. And I love how much he hates Jack Grealish.
Throw Declan Rice into that as well. Thanks, Adam. That actually is something that's kind of important to me, though, is that I've always kind of enjoyed being able to represent Irish interests in some way on the podcast. Like, there aren't that many people who kind of would speak about, like, the Irish players and put, like, an extra focus on them. And whilst it's largely FPL irrelevant, I do enjoy kind of making sure that people know, you know, how Adam Ida is, you know, doing something good at Norwich, or, you know, if Matt Doherty has, like, anything, something significant at all happening, I'll throw his name in, or Seamus Coleman, or whoever else it might be.
Yeah, Obafemi is one of your favourites.
Obafemi, yeah, that was a much harder one to try and justify, to be honest. It was like, a good 5 million forward, Obafemi, and then just, you know, crickets.
He's Irish, he'll be all right. I mean, thanks to you, I know how to say Coivin Kelleher. So yeah, there we go.
We might have to do that one again.
but at least I'm not looking at and going, chow mean.
Yeah, Queen's weekend, the Carabao Cup final. Yeah, like the start of Queen and then Veen. Yeah.
Friend of the pod, who's on the pod probably a few months ago now, James Carroll, said, look, it's hard to come up with a few things to say, really. He says he certainly hopes that Anthony finds time to return to podcasts in the future, as I think is a natural. Always enjoyed listening to him talk FPL even before he joined WTA as a host, so he'll be definitely missed. He said that he was lucky to be with us on his podcast and debut, that he was in very safe hands for that podcast.
That's very nice to James, and James is absolutely flying this year. He was 10th in the mini league there earlier and is making a good run at winning the whole entire lot of FPL this year. Might be a little bit out of reach, but hopefully he can get there. He's flying the flag well for the pod.
Yeah, 10th I'm in the league. Chris, at FPL Janino, well, it's finally happened. Tom has fulfilled his long ambition to kill the correspondence corner. he said he's greatly enjoyed Anthony's run on the podcast, his dry wit and love of audacious FPL punts, which are doomed to pale. TC Duffy has made a natural fit. Now he's stepped back from regular podding. Hopefully the curse of FPL content provider will be lifted from him, and he hopes to listen to you again from his guest spots. And he literally cannot get away from the idea of you disappearing away, of sailing away on the boat, and he hopes you enjoy law going forward.
Thanks. Yeah, maybe I will end up sailing away in the future to see something else, but for now, yeah, I'll be very much ensconced in offices and definitely following me with the FPL. And yeah, I never actually said it to any of those, like, I will definitely get back on as a guest when you guys will have me at some point in the future. I look forward to it.
Goop says Anthony has been great to listen to. He said he could listen to those Hibernian tones all day long. He said what he loves about Stag is that he plays his own game. Way too many pods are samey, with the team agreeing with each other ad nauseam, but Stag has his own style. It's often a bit maverick, but he backs himself. He's always got great rationale for his picks, and it's great to hear the Stag's take, which was your Rotowild thing, I think, elevated from written to oral form. A very nice guy, hardworking, and he wishes him all the best for his real life going forward. And he hopes, again, that your podcast, The Curse, is going to be lifted after this.
Thanks very much, Goose. Nice of him to write in with that. Yeah, it is. Hopefully the curse is lifted, because seriously, it has actually been a thing. Like, I've seldom ran a good season when I've been on the pod. It's been a total disaster. It is genuinely a thing where you really get into your own head, and we've all experienced it. And it's hard. And fair play to the lads that are able to create content weekly and still maintain, like, the super high rank. Doing it so often, it is actually very difficult to do. So.
Tom Campbell says he's always grateful for Anthony for stepping in to help the podcast. Says a lovely way of expressing things. We could all learn a thing or two from him about how to not be too hard on ourselves when things don't work out. He says, I personally love the correspondence section. It's in keeping with what WGCA is all about, and I hope his legacy continues on with that feature.
what a legacy. Yeah, I got good at not being hard on myself from an FPL context, TC. I think that's what's part of it.
And finally, John, that FPL brain, says he always enjoyed listening to Anthony and the natural rapport he had between you, me and Nick. He has a calm way of talking about FPL with his usual info, but he's very easy to listen to. And I also found he has a strong sense of perspective, i.e. that FPL is a hobby you will enjoy, but it's not life and death. A smart, likeable chap who comes across just a good person. He might not be. He might be drowning puppies on the weekend for all I know. But that's how he sounds to me. I'm sure he's a great guy to sit and have a pint with. Maybe his FPL outcomes have not been great, but who cares?
I'd love to get that point with the gang as well. It's one of those things that almost, it's a bit of a regret that in the time I've been a host of the pod, most of it has been pandemic addled. So I haven't been able to attend any meetups in that time. And I do look forward to grabbing a pint with these people. Even if I'm not a host, I hope they'll have me about for a pint at some point over in, probably meet you guys over in London at some point. Nick, still haven't even met you in person.
It would be. So... It would be nice to meet you in person at some point. But yeah, just to reiterate what the other people have said, I think you've been a joy to podcast alongside. And when I left the pod, I knew that the pod was in like incredibly safe hands. And I think you just kind of fit into the flow of the pod and working alongside myself and Tom just really seamlessly. Like you've been there the whole time and helped us with all our all the translation pronunciations of the Irish names and everything. I think it's certainly apt with Matt Doherty that he's actually had such an amazing performance just in your final week of the podcast. And yeah, you'll certainly be greatly missed and hope move on to better and bigger things.
Oh, Jesus, no, I'll be back. It's kind of felt like I've died or something having all those read out. You know, isn't there that quote about you die twice, once when you draw your last breath and the other time when no one says your name again. It's like, have I got a third one in here when you retire from FPL podcasting? But thanks so much to Nick and Tom for your kind words and everyone else who wrote in as well. It's been a real thrill to be part of the pod as much as I have been in the last few years as a guest before and then coming on as a co-host as well. A really great opportunity and one that I hope the gang who are coming after me will really treasure it too, because it is definitely a privilege to be A, on the pod, and B, to reach as many people's ears as we do when we're on this pod each week. And people do listen to us, and people really listen to us in depth as well. Like you sometimes see the comments or tweets or DMs or whatever you get about like a small point that you might have raised and someone cops on to the detail. So you know that you're being listened to, and that I guess makes you do your research and make sure that you have the data to back up your points. And that's really important. That's something that this pod, you know, tries to do as much as possible. But it's also a real privilege, I guess, to be under that sort of scrutiny and analysis when you're doing the pod. So yeah, thanks guys.
Cool. Well, I think that's probably everything this week. Thanks for listening. We were Who Got the Assist. WGCA_FPL. Thanks, Anthony, for joining me for 60 podcasts as it is. I'll certainly miss you on the podcast, that's for sure. And hopefully we'll have you back on very, very soon.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah. And thank you, Nick. It's been good. Thank you.
Yeah, certainly. And it's nice to be back. But yeah, Tom will be moving forwards with Harry and Lucy later on as well. So,
exciting times.
Not the end of the pod.
No, I think end of an era, certainly to some extent, but nonetheless, the pod and WGCA will go on. Hope to see you this week, talk about a lot of things, be it the risk profile, a bit double game week going forward. I'll speak to you with FPL Harry next week, who starts his end of season stint. I think it'll be midweek through game 28, so before midweek take a set of fixtures, but after Monday. But in the meantime, hope to see you, and I'll speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye. Woo, you're done, Anthony. You're done. Get out of it.
Bye. Slams the door.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.